welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buehr.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you to the episode you have been waiting 8 to 9 months for. This is an actual preview episode of a Gopher football game that will be taking place here this week as the Gophers take on the Corn Cobs of Nebraska, game one of the Matt Rhule era. But most importantly, Luke, I don't have to now deal in hypotheticals. I don't have to deal in recruiting more or less. I actually get to do the part of the job that I probably enjoy most, and that's talking about the Gopher football team on the field.
Yeah, it's fun. We're kicking off the 2023 season. It'll be an interesting season. Just given how much turnover there's been on this Gopher roster, and you know, as we've talked about for a long time, you know, the identity will change, new offensive coordinator, etc. It's going to be fun. We're probably going to know who the play caller is, Ryan, on Thursday evening. So that'll be nice.
You'll actually get answers to so many of the questions that we still don't know. Who's calling the plays? Who is the second running back? What is the offensive line look like? Who rotates in on defense? Yada, yada, yada. Again, Fleck loves to play it so dang close to the vest because college football coaches are some of the most paranoid people on the planet, if not the United States as well. So that's where it's going to be. We'll have answers to all those things. And the beauty of it too, Luke, is on Friday, Derek Burns will make his triumphant return. And for the first time as one of the co-founders of Dinky Town Athletes.
Yeah, it'll be fun to talk with Derek again. Just a reminder that they're running a member drive right now. Make sure to, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and you're not a member of Dinky Town Athletes, if you're listening to this podcast, you're basically a Gopher football sicko, right? Just join Dinky Town Athletes. It's a way that you can absolutely contribute to the name, image, and likeness program here at the University of Minnesota, which is Dinky Town Athletes. Support Derek Burns and what they're doing. Just go and do it. It's awesome. DinkyTownAthletes.com. But yeah, it'll be awesome to have him back, Ryan. No question. We are so fortunate to have both his expertise and his passion for Gopher football, not only representing Dinky Town Athletes, but helping us out on this podcast.
100%. So I cannot stress to you how much I'm already looking forward to being there Thursday night. Also, I guess announced that I'll be on the pregame show on KFAN every single week, me and Gardzi, previewing the game. So as you're driving into the stadium, put it on KFAN, you'll hear these lovely dulcet tones of mine. And then Gopher Football Sunday, we'll be back once again, where if you're up at the crack of dawn, which I consider, I don't know, 8 a.m. or so, Gardzi and I usually carve out about a half hour between 8:15 and 8:45. Gardzi gets the whole hour on KFAN. So you get me in the pregame, you get me in the postgame, you get me on this podcast. It's going to be a lot of these dulcet tones, Luke, and I don't know that their ears can handle it, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, no kidding. Let's go through some housekeeping items, Ryan. We typically start this off by talking about injuries, and we talk about depth chart and those sorts of things. We actually more so make fun of the fact that Minnesota never releases a depth chart, but that's changing, is it not?
Well, I don't know that the depth chart part is changing, but news out of the press conference, which is funny, that this all started from PJ Fleck's press conference on Friday. I asked him, I go, do you have any injury updates? Because there are a couple of injuries that I was waiting to hear if he was going to address them or not. And he goes, I don't have any updates, but you know, I think the Big Ten is going to – you'll hear more about the Big Ten thing later. And then Andy Greeter comes out and actually does some sleuthing about it. And turns out by the end of the day, the Big Ten conference has announced – you'll like how wordy this one is – the U.S. Integrity Partnership and Game Day Availability Report, because doesn't that roll off the tongue? So essentially, the Big Ten Conference announced that it's going to debut a Game Day Availability Report for all football games in 2023, trying to enhance monitoring effort, provide additional educational resources to not have their student-athletes engage in sports betting, which is an interesting way to put it. So essentially, what does this mean? This means that PJ Fleck is going to have to put out an availability slash injury report 2 hours before the game. So with the 7 p.m. kick on Thursday, at 5 p.m., if not earlier, Gopher Football is required now to put out an availability report. Now, my question to you is this, Luke. Are all 14, what is it, 14? Yeah, it's 14, right? Yeah, it's 14 Big Ten schools. Are they all going to turn their nose at this and laugh at it and say, I'm just going to list 47 players questionable for the game. You figure it out from there. F you. Or are they actually going to take it seriously and have guys out, have guys questionable, have guys doubtful, probable, just like NFL injury reports that you're used to seeing? Do you think in year one of the U.S. Integrity Partnership and Game Day Availability Report that PJ Fleck is going to take this seriously or not?
It's hard to say. I imagine that if they've put together some sort of process and kind of some sort of governing body, they may monitor it as well and make sure that you're not just kind of turning your nose at this kind of requirement. So I think that will be the determining factor. If anybody gets their hand slapped or yelled at or whatever.
Well, my big question to you also is, Luke, do you think Kirk Ferentz 2 hours before every game is going to look into his locker room and see about half the team refreshing their phones trying to get the latest availability report so that they can continue to bet on more games?
Yeah, that's a conversation that's probably worth an entire podcast. And in general, it seems weird that only Iowa is getting dinged for this because betting is legal elsewhere. Oh, Iowa and Iowa State. So I'm wondering where this is all coming up from. And the other thing is, like, aren't a lot of these athletes getting dinged for betting on other sports? And I guess I don't know why that matters other than they're in the athletic department and they might have inside knowledge. So it's like insider trading. But in some ways, I feel like that story is a lot to do about nothing. That's my personal opinion. But, you know, now if they were under 21 and they were breaking the law, sure. And I get that they've signed probably some code of ethics and they've been trained, but I feel like that's a little bit a lot to do about nothing.
I feel differently than you, and that's okay.
It's fine.
Totally good with Iowa and Iowa State getting dinged for this. I do think it's funny that some members of the Iowa media are trying to say more or less, you know, Iowa against the world. Why is it only Iowa getting dinged for this? And I'm thinking to myself, how many more things like this can Kirk Ferentz continue to just ride through unscathed?
Sure.
How many more random, just different? I think scandal is not necessarily the right word for this situation, but just think of how this would be playing with the Star Tribune right now compared to how it's being played down in Iowa City with media coverage. That, to me, kind of tells more of the story.
Sure. Yeah, I do think it's interesting that we haven't heard this, you know, more elsewhere. Like, what, there's got to be close to 20 states that have legal sports betting, right? So to tell me that there aren't more of this going on legally or illegally, like, that's the thing that I find a little bit unique. I'm just curious, like, where did the tip come in? I know that Iowa does a really good job, or a lot of these states do a really good job on, like, geolocation. It's all app based, so it's really easy to tie to an individual. So
yeah, who really pursued this from within the football complex?
Yeah,
potentially not raised great, a Bob. Couple of red flags hypothetically.
Yeah,
I mean, it could be as simple as that. Or I'm sure you've seen, like I have, the Hunter Deckers, which is the who was the Iowa State starting quarterback, taking bets on Snapchat. While likely intoxicated at a bar, and then saying at the end of it, "Hey, you can't put this on social media. I'll get dinged for it." And then what happens in the day and age of 2023?
Yeah, he got dinged for it.
Just assume it's always going to end up on social media.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I don't know. I maybe don't know enough about this story, but in the end, I do think it's interesting.
Do you think PJ Fleck is going to take it seriously?
Take the report seriously,
not betting on sports.
Yeah, no, the report, but the report. Yeah, the report of
the original game day availability report. Do you think he's likely going to do what Jim Harbaugh is going to do and list the entire team as questionable to say F
you? I think that's more likely.
Do you think he's actually going to be truthful more or less on this?
I think that he will be truthful on the guys that he either states at the closing press conference, or like not the after game press conference, that are like out for the season if they exist. Like, he'll probably be truthful about those and they'll say out. But then the rest, there's a non-zero chance that every player is questionable.
God, I would kill for a depth chart. If you want a depth chart, I tweeted some out, my projected ones, because Minnesota is so paranoid they won't release one. Plus, they don't want angry parents saying, why is Johnny and Joe second on the depth chart, but Johnny and Jim is first? And who cares in 2023? But that's here nor there. But the other thing I want to touch on before we get into this Minnesota versus Nebraska game is to remind our listeners, Luke, about a couple of key rule changes.
Yes.
For college football this fall, so you can start to kind of wrap your mind around it before you head to the game on Thursday night and tailgate, or you're watching it on Fox at 7 p.m. So the first one I want to note, this is one that if you watch a lot of Minnesota Vikings football, I would imagine you're pretty used to, and that is the game clock will run after first downs as it does in the NFL, except for the last 2 minutes of each half. Now, you remember that prior to this rule change, officials stopped the clock on every first down awarded, and then, again, they would restart it. But now the game clock just runs because it sounds like more or less college games were running 3 hours and 30 minutes-ish, I think, on average. And now they just want to keep the clock moving. So what is your thoughts on this one?
In general, I understand the intent. Thus far in week zero, I don't think it's really materialized. Actually, frankly, it's just not materialized at all. It will be interesting to see with a larger sample size, but in the seven games played, this is a tweet I found this week, since week zero took place. In the seven games, there was an average of 63.3 plays per game with a duration of 3 hours and 24 minutes. Last season, over 896 games, there were 68.7 plays per game with an average of 3 hours and 27 minutes. So, it saved about 3 minutes of game time in total, and we saw about, you know, five less plays. But again, sample size is too small. Will be interesting. I don't think it's going to have nearly the effect or impact that we've seen, like with some of the rule changes in baseball. Don't expect that, right? But in general, it's not going to look that weird because so many people watch the NFL too. So people will acclimate to this rule change pretty quickly. It might speed up the game a little bit, but I don't think it'll be drastic.
So I'll remind folks once again, I'll repeat it for those of you who missed it. The game clock is going to run after first downs as it does in the NFL, except for the last 2 minutes of each half. The next one is you can no longer essentially ice the kicker. A team cannot call consecutive timeouts. So they want to keep the game moving is what they're saying, but essentially, you know, you don't want to call a timeout, put the kicker on the field, call a timeout before he kicks again. There is no more icing the kicker in college football, more or less. Luke, what are your thoughts?
This is disappointing to me for one reason and one reason only. We will not get the glorious quote from Kirk Ferentz where he said, we decided we leave the timeouts and take Floyd too, because that was hilarious.
I mean, that's an all-timer. I know that many Gopher fans are probably
still, I know they don't like it. Quote. Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. It's very petty.
If and when Minnesota ends that streak against Kirk Ferentz, Fleck should call three timeouts after the final three plays just so he can say the same exact thing. I think that's pretty funny.
I think that would be really funny and even pettier. But in general, no, I don't think this is a bad rule change at all. I'm for anything that's going to help kind of speed up and just not stagnate the game, right? Meaningless stagnation. I think meaningless stagnation is annoying.
All right, and the final rule change that you likely will notice maybe once this season, I can't think of any times it really happened off the top of my head, is untimed downs. So I'll say that again. Untimed downs will only occur as needed in the second and fourth quarters, essentially before halftime or before the end of the game. If there is a foul at the end of the first or third quarter, it will carry over into the next quarter. So if there is a penalty essentially that is impeding the quarter at the end of the first or third from expiring, they're just going to say, hey, we're just going to carry this into the start of the second and fourth. But obviously if it happens before halftime or the end of the game, they're going to honor that as an untimed down.
So I think in that New Mexico State game, the Jerry Kill game, I was watching the very end of that. They scored with like as time expired, and then they didn't kick the extra point. So that would be the untimed down didn't happen. I wonder if that was part of that rule change, because I was surprised they didn't kick the ball there. I'll look that up. But in general, that did catch me off guard. And so I wish I would have had this podcast before that, assuming that's correct.
Well, maybe also the most important thing in this was the rule that was not changed, and that is targeting is still targeting. There is no tiered system like there is in basketball with like a flagrant one or a flagrant two in terms of ejection. If you get knocked for targeting in the game, you are still going to be ejected. So hopefully that's the next rule change that happens after this season. But once again, those are the three rule changes to remember heading into Thursday night. Is the clock's going to run after first downs, except for the last 2 minutes of each half?
Yes.
Can't ice the kicker anymore, and untimed downs will only occur before halftime and before the end of the game.
Whew, okay, that concludes
housekeeping.
That's fun. It's going to be slightly different, but not drastically different. I don't think it'll make a big impact on confusing people or a drastic impact on the pace of play of games. Maybe we can be wrong, but that's my estimation. Maybe let's jump into just some injury reports and or depth chart, which is to say we probably don't really know anything, right, Ryan?
If you're asking about the Minnesota side of things, you certainly don't know much. Again, I asked the question on Friday, which spurred Flex comment, which spurred Andy Greeter's report, which spurred the national reporters, which spurred the Big Ten releasing something. So I guess in a roundabout way, Luke, you're welcome for asking PJ Fleck an injury question.
Yeah, thanks for making that happen, Ryan. Great work.
Yeah, you're welcome. But the only thing we really know is on the Nebraska side of things, they've been pretty healthy, more or less. I was talking with Brian Christofferson of Husker 24/7. You'll be able to read what he says about Nebraska here on Tuesday morning. But they're pretty healthy on that side of Nebraska, I guess I would say. Mm-hmm. On the Minnesota side of things, we saw Jamison Gears, who is backup tight end, in a leg brace last we saw the team 2 weeks ago. And, I mean, that's about it for, I guess, major injury-wise. I mean, we saw that Ethan Kaliak-Manis did not practice the day we were there. I have no reservations about that. I know he has practiced since then. He's going to be ready to go, so we'll see what happens on that game day availability report. I've heard some rumblings about a potential defensive line injury, but not to someone that has me wanting to get anyone listening to this panicked. I think you'll see it on Thursday when he doesn't play. But other than that, Luke, I think both teams, as far as I know, are pretty healthy going into game one.
All right. So let's maybe dive into this offensive side of the ball when the Gophers are on offense. We know, like, we don't have any stats to reference, you know, where Nebraska's coming in from, where Minnesota's offense is coming from. So being able to introduce that, there's nothing there, so we have no expectations. I think it's safe to say, Ryan, that we have expectations that Minnesota will be throwing the ball more than they did last year. And I do know that Nebraska should be featuring a different defense, one that a Minnesota staff member should be well acquainted with in general. If memory serves, they're planning to run a 3-3-5. Is that correct?
Minnesota will start their season going against a 3-3-5 defense. They will end their season going against
a 3-3-5 defense
in Wisconsin. But yes, Minnesota will be going against the 3-3-5, which is from Tony White. And if that name somehow sounds familiar, you're a college football sicko, because you'll remember the Gophers played against Tony White, or at least his defensive scheme, in their bowl game, because he was the Syracuse defensive coordinator before taking the Nebraska gig. And why Luke mentioned Minnesota may have at least a little bit of inside knowledge about how he wants to do things is because you'll remember that Minnesota also took a Syracuse defensive coach as their corners coach. Nick Monroe was with the Syracuse Orange the last few seasons with Tony White. So I'm sure it'll be a little bit different, but I would imagine that Minnesota's offensive staff has at least gone to Nick Monroe and said, what does Tony White like to do in this situation, this situation, this situation? Now, if you just want to look at the Husker defense overall, it's been okay the last few seasons, I guess I would say. It started out not great last year, got better as the season went on, I thought. I will say it for the 400th time when I've talked about Nebraska, it feels like when you look at Nebraska's players on the field, they look like they're Big Ten players and they're supposed to be there. It's never really about talent for them. It's about getting 11 guys moving in the same direction, not having a coverage breakdown, a run bust, whatever it may be. So I'm very interested to see how they all kind of mesh together in game one of a new defensive scheme there. On the Minnesota side of things, it's what does the offense look like when instead of Mo Ibrahim stirring the drink, Ethan Calliope-McManus is going to be the igniter for this offense. He will be each and every week. Now, I don't have to remind anybody that Minnesota threw the ball second to last in terms of Power 5 passing attempts last year. They threw the ball 21.3 times per game, them in the service academies and one of Luke's all-time favorite college football teams. The only one that threw the ball less than Minnesota last fall, Luke Buehr's Connecticut Huskies at 21.1. Now, I expect that number to rise considerably. I'll get into it in my keys to the game, but I still think even if Minnesota throws the ball, say, 28 times a game, I don't think people realize how much college football teams throw in this day and age. The median they say the average, I would say. If you were average in passing attempts in college football, FBS level, you were throwing the ball north of 30 times per game. I don't know that I see that happening on average, but I will say, a lot of this game is going to come down to these brand new quarterbacks. Which quarterback can take care of the ball? Which quarterback can make some explosive plays? Which one can you rely upon more over 60 minutes is going to be a big question. But I do expect to see fans getting a look at a little bit different of an offense. It's still going to be a PJ Fleck offense, but I think you'll be able to see what a Greg Harbaugh and Matt Simon offense looks like scheme-wise, stylistically, and with a lot of brand new faces out there.
Yeah, I think the thing that I'm most interested to see, obviously Ethan Calliope-McManus, but some of these transfers, Ryan, that we haven't seen thus far that we've talked about, Crooms, Spencer, the running back whose name is escaping.
Yeah, if you're trying to get acclimated with some names and you haven't been listening to the episodes, you've got plenty of time here before Thursday. But if you want the TLDR, Minnesota's new starting running back is a kid by the name of Sean Tyler from Western Michigan, has run for over 1,000 yards in each of the last two seasons for the Western Michigan Broncos, but he is not a workhorse running back. You're going to remember Mo Ibrahim's 24, getting 25, 30, 35 carries a game. In Sean Tyler's entire collegiate career, he has only three games of over 20 or more carries. So he's going to be a guy that gets the ball quite a bit, but it's going to be around that 18-ish mark, probably, is what I would guess. And then Minnesota's got a couple of transfers in their receiving core. One you'll see in the slot starting, I would imagine, by the name of Corey Crooms, probably the most prolific slot receiver in the MAC last year. Minnesota was able to get him. And then Elijah Spencer as well from Charlotte, who I believe is number 11 on the roster, number one in Luke Buehr's heart. 2021 Conference USA Freshman of the Year, has been very prolific in his first 2 years of college football at the group of five level. So you've got a little bit more depth and talent there in the receiving core to go with Brevin Spanford. I'm the conductor of the Daniel Jackson hype train, and I will continue to chug right along those tracks. And then you've also, we'll see how much Chris Ottman-Bell also plays in year one, in game one, I should say. And then the Wisconsin game hero, Lemecki Brockington's also there.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. And just to get acclimated on a new feel with Matt Simon and Greg Harbaugh taking the reins will also be interesting. And like we said, we'll probably know who calls plays after the game. I imagine then they'll finally talk about it. I don't know why it needs to be so secretive.
Because PJ Fleck is one of the most paranoid men in Minnesota, because I think he thinks it'll give Nebraska an edge to either go look at Matt Simon's bowl game calling versus Greg Harbaugh's Western Michigan three game sample size in like 2017 or something.
Sure.
So welcome to paranoid men in college football.
Yeah. Otherwise, anything that we should note about the Nebraska defense, other, any guys to look out for, people that we should be highlighting or spotlighting?
I would guess that the best player on their defense, they would say, is probably a linebacker by the name of Luke Reimer, someone that's been pretty proven over the last few years, pretty good in coverage. I mean, they got some defensive backs who are pretty good, Quentin Newsome among others. But to me, it comes down to what we've seen the last few seasons is why has Minnesota been able to win the game so consistently? They've pretty much beaten up Nebraska in the trenches. And that's where one of the things I will note about Minnesota's offense is I asked PJ on Friday, I go, have you figured out your starting five for the offensive line? Or are you thinking about rotating? Because I'm going back and having nightmares to the 2019 season where they're rotating six or seven guys at times. And Fleck seemingly said they're going to rotate, which I absolutely despise. I would rather them just stick with five for a game. Mm-hmm. And if you don't like it, rotate somebody in next game, give them their shot over a course of 60 to 65 plays. But just know that if you're looking out on the field and you're like, oh, is that a different right tackle or a different left guard or whatever it may mm-hmm. be, your eyes are not going to deceive you more than likely.
Ryan, we run a podcast, so I have to ask you, are you an over-the-ear headphones person or an earbuds person?
I have been an earbud guy for a long time, and I actually bought some Comply foam ear tips for the first time, and I found out, Luke, that my ears aren't supposed to hurt when I have my Beats Pros in or your Apple AirPods. Or that they actually can stay in my ear consistently if I'm working out, if I'm mowing the lawn, or if I'm just doing random stuff around the house. Truly, I had no idea that my earbuds weren't supposed to hurt my ears until I put in these Comply foam ear tips. Look.
All right, yeah. So for the 2023 season, we are being sponsored by Comply Foam. You can go to complyfoam.com. No matter what kind of earbuds you might have, they have a way to help you look those up. You can find specialized earbuds just for your specific headphone. Hey, if you're making an investment into headphones, make sure that they're the most comfortable and the best quality headphones possible. So if you want to save on your very first order, use the code GG23 and you will save 20% on your first order. Again, that's GG23, complyfoam.com. Ryan, let's talk about when the Gophers are on defense. Again, we don't have any stats because it's a new season, but the Gopher defense is going to have to, as we've talked about, replace a number of key contributors over the years. But again, they'll have a couple key contributors back, like Tyler Newbin, like Justin Wally, like Cody Lindenberg, like Ja Joyner, etc. So what can we expect from this Gopher defense here in week one against Nebraska?
The thing I think I'll be looking forward to seeing most is how much of a step forward has the defensive line taken. It's been one of the biggest talking points of the entire offseason. I know it. You know it. Your mother-in-law probably knows it. Minnesota didn't do a good enough job of generating pressure last year before. They would get pressure at times, wouldn't get consistent enough pressure. They would get pressure but not get the sack. That's how Ja Joyner ends up leading the team with, I think, 32 pressures via Pro Football Focus and only ending the season with a sack and a half. Not a very efficient pass rush when the pass rush was there last fall. Now, why there's reasons for optimism is Minnesota returns a lot of guys who got their feet wet in the Big Ten for the first time last year. Guys like Danny Strigau, who's now going to be starting at Rush End where Thomas Rush used to be. Guys like Kyler Baugh, who transferred in from the FCS, got his feet wet last year at defensive tackle, will be starting there. Guys like Ja Joyner and Jalen Logan Redding, who have had a very, very strong drumbeat the entire offseason. PJ Fleck loves to talk about Jalen Logan Redding, number 97, you'll remember. Someone that has allegedly taken a pretty big step forward from what I've seen in practice. I do believe he's also taken a step forward. We've talked about Ja Joyner, but maybe two guys that can really inject a little life into the pass rush are Devin Eastern, a third-year guy from Shakopee, Minnesota, and then a redshirt freshman. Both four-star guys we're talking about here in Eastern, and second-year guy Anthony Smith, who is probably the guy you want first off the bus, just 6'6", 285-ish pounds. Someone that has kind of forced his way into this defensive line rotation. Now, when I think about a Nebraska offensive line in recent history, they haven't been very good. It's been one of the games each and every season here recently where you know Minnesota is going to get something resembling a pass rush. Now, I know that Nebraska fans are likely more bullish on their offensive line, and probably understandably so. They returned starters up there, took some transfers. But that, to me, is the one I want to see most, is Minnesota's got guys on the defensive line. I do believe that. But how are these are just guys, or are they quote-unquote dudes? Are we going to see Danny Strigow, Ja Joyner, Jalen Logan Redding take that next step? What can Devin Eastern and Anthony Smith provide in their first real game of Big Ten action in a meaningful way? All things I'm really looking forward to seeing, because there may be no more important job on the entire field than what that pass rush is going to have in trying to keep Nebraska's quarterback, Jeff Sims, contained in the pocket.
All right, so Jeff Sims, known to be a very athletic dual threat, right? But he also has a pretty big arm, but has a tendency to throw a number of has a history of throwing a number of interceptions. I imagine, you know, with a somewhat experienced secondary with Newbin and Wally there, but also some unproven things, that's an area to watch, especially with Darius Green getting extended run. We're not entirely sure who's going to play the other corner position, because obviously, as we mentioned earlier, we don't have a depth chart. I'm interested to see how much they actually throw. And in reality, Ryan, I feel like if Nebraska is going to win this game, they might do it with Jeff Sims and his legs.
Yeah, you kind of stole my thunder with my keys to the game a little bit later, but my number two key to the game is don't let Jeff Sims' legs beat you. If Minnesota loses on Thursday night and it's because of Jeff Sims' arm, I will take that, and I'm sure Joe Rossi, Minnesota's defensive coordinator, would too. That's where I was spending a lot of time earlier today looking up Jeff Sims' career numbers. And the thing I kind of stumbled upon when looking at the Pro Football Focus sack-adjusted rushing numbers, a.k.a. his rushing yards when you take out sacks. Jeff Sims, in over his last 13 full games, has averaged over 65 rushing yards per game. I mean, that's just tells the story of how prolific he is with his legs. Someone that can break the pocket, account, and really say it's a third down. If your pass rush gets too deep or you don't have enough guys in the middle to contain Sims, he's going to break the pocket and run for a first down and extend drives. So maybe that's going to be one of the most talked about things on this podcast, is going to be how can Minnesota try and contain Jeff Sims. He was a 3-year starter at Georgia Tech before hitting the portal to come over and play for Matt Rhule. Nebraska's offensive coordinator, Marcus Satterfield, is someone that was at South Carolina last year. So you have South Carolina's offensive coordinator. You've got Georgia Tech's quarterback, and their skill positions are very much, I think, still up in the air in terms of knowing what they're getting. But this truly does come down to, as much as Ethan Kaliak-Manis is the straw that stirs the drink for Minnesota's offense, it's the same way for Nebraska. If you can make Jeff Sims more one-dimensional, I would imagine Minnesota's going to have a lot of success defensively on Thursday night.
As you already know, Home Field is sponsoring Gopher Gridiron Radio for the entire 2023 season. Ryan and I both have Home Field apparel, and Ryan, both of our wives steal it more than I think either of us get to wear it.
If there is one glowing recommendation you, the listener, can take, it's that if you know that piece of clothing that you own, that you ordered, that you were looking forward to wearing, and then you never get to wear because your wife loves how it fits, loves how comfortable it is, loves the style of it, loves the uniqueness of it. Welcome to Home Field Apparel. So if you want some unique Gopher clothing that you're not going to see anyone wearing anywhere else, if you want to see maroon and gold colored stuff, different patterns, different types of vintage type of clothing that Luke and I can both attest, the comfortability of their material is outstanding, and stuff that your wives are going to want to steal from you. Luke, how could you save potentially on your first order?
You can use the promo code GG23 to save on your first order at homefieldapparel.com. All right, Ryan, it is once again time to get to the facts and figures for this game. So on the season, the University of Minnesota is 0-0. Nebraska is 0-0. Both are 0-0 against the spread. The spread for this game currently is 7 in favor of Minnesota, with an over-under of 43.5. Taking a look at the weather, in the greater Twin Cities area for a 7 p.m. kick. It looks like it's going to be about 78 degrees with about 14 miles an hour of wind south-southeast. The humidity looks pretty good. The dew point will be in the middle 50s, middle to low 50s. And as the game goes on and the night wraps up, it'll be about 73 degrees. So if you're out there and you're tailgating around 2 when I think the tailgate's open, should be about 81 to 82. There should be a decent wind, right around 15 miles an hour, but it'll be a very lovely end of August as we kick off the football season, Ryan.
It's interesting to me that the over-under for this game continues to go down. When I had checked earlier today, it was 44.5. I think the number when the initial line was released weeks ago was upper 40s, 47, 48. And now we're already in the 43s. So I don't think Vegas is obviously too bullish on how many points will be scored in this game. We'll see if that's true or not. But I think the more important thing here is, Luke, the weather looks fantastic. So if you've been on the fence about coming to a Gopher football game, you didn't know what the Nebraska weather was going to, or the Minnesota-Nebraska weather was going to look like, to Luke's point, by the time kickoff comes, it's going to be 80-ish degrees. It's going to be a little windy out of the south. We'll see if that plays a factor in the game or not. But it's enough wind that'll keep you comfortable in the tailgating lots for the duration of your stay out there.
All right, and this game will be on Fox. You'll get Joe Klatt and you'll get Gus Johnson for a 7 p.m. kick. So make sure that if you're one that really enjoys or does not enjoy, you mute accordingly. Yeah, it should be just great, Ryan, to have football back again, a Thursday night kick. Kind of has been the tradition for a number of years now. Starting at home against Nebraska will be fun. In again, just a Big Ten game. So let's get your thoughts and keys to this game.
Well, my number one key to the game, to the surprise of absolutely no one, is they have to get their quarterback, Minnesota's Ethan Calliope-Manis, going early. Because if you're a Minnesota fan listening to this, you're well aware of the statistic that I'm about to share from last season. The Gophers refused to throw the ball at times, and because of that, it was them and the service academies for passing attempts per game last fall. Minnesota ranked second to last in Power 5 football with only 21.3 passing attempts per game, with Connecticut being the only Power 5 team lower than them at 21.1. Now, I've gone on record all offseason stating that Minnesota is going to throw the ball more in 2023. And I've even gone as far as to say any other year in the Fleck era. Now, I understand that the bar to clear for that statement isn't exactly sky high, with the 2018 Minnesota season being the benchmark for that at 26.6 passing attempts per game. Now, I've got Minnesota throwing the ball north of 28 times per game this fall, which would elevate them from 127th in FBS and passing attempts to around 97th. So even a 30-team jump would be pretty remarkable in my eyes, because if to give you more context, the average team in FBS college football in terms of passing attempts is somewhere around 32 per game. Now, why I continue to bang the drum of passing attempts likely being on the rise here is because this offense is going to go from the Mo Ibrahim offense to the Ethan Calliope-Manis and his pass catcher's offense. He's the most gifted passer that PJ has had taking snaps in his entire tenure as a head coach. And Ethan's pass catching options as well are about as deep as Minnesota's had in some time. I'll remind you that they are going to be returning one of the best tight ends in college football on Brevin Span Ford, who needs 40 catches and 471 receiving yards to surpass one of my favorite Gophers of all time, Matt Spaeth, to become the all-time leader in tight end categories for in both of those statistics. I already mentioned Elijah Spencer and Corey Kroom, so they brought in from the transfer portal at receiver, plus they returned seventh-year guy Chris Ottman-Bell. I've been on the Daniel Jackson is my wide receiver one hype train the entire offseason, plus we have the Wisconsin game hero Lamecki Brockington as well. You can see there's top-end talent there, plus there's also depth. Now, the strength of this offense, I will reiterate once again, is going to go from Mo Ibrahim in the offensive line last fall to Ethan and his pass catchers this fall. So if I'm the offensive coordinators of Greg Harbaugh and Matt Simon, I'm doing whatever I can in these first few drives against the Nebraska defense to get the sophomore signal caller comfortable. Whatever the throws are that make him go, are the ones I want to go to early and often to build his confidence for later in that game when they really need him to make a couple of throws. The running game's not going to go away. It's still a PJ Fleck offense, but the passing game is going to be much more important, much more involved, and they need it to be because this offense needs to become a lot more explosive. They've been more explosive throughout the fall, throughout the spring, but that's been because of Ethan in this passing game. Now, defensively for Minnesota, you can't let their quarterback, Jeff Sims, beat you with his legs. For those of you who aren't aware, Nebraska's got a brand new quarterback as they took Georgia Tech starter for the last 3 years in Jeff Sims. Now, the biggest thing I'm going to continue to stress is they have to keep him in the pocket because he's a prolific scrambler. When you look at the pro football focus, sack-adjusted rushing numbers from the last two seasons for Jeff Sims, he's averaged over 65 rushing yards per game. Now, let's look at his career passing stats. He's a 57% completion percentage guy with 30 passing touchdowns to 23 interceptions. Now, I know Nebraska fans will tell me, well, Ryan, take out his first year as the starter. Okay, well, we're still talking about a career passer of 59% of his throws with 17 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. But make no mistake about it, where he adds the most value is with his legs. That's what makes him so dangerous. He's 6'3", he's a big athlete, he can get away from arm tackles, and he's got the speed to run around a defensive end or a linebacker for a first down. Maybe the most important statistic I tell you from this is Jeff Sims's legs have accounted for 43 first downs in his last 13 games. That's over 3 first downs per game that Sims just gets with his legs. He wants to break the pocket. He wants to run. There will be some design runs as well, but keeping him contained is going to be important. Now, the thing with Jeff Sims is he's had some turnover issues throughout his career. I mentioned the interceptions in his career. He's got 23 in his first three seasons. But the other thing I would note, Luke, is that Jeff Sims also has 17 career fumbles. So between the interceptions and the fumbles, that's a lot of history of putting the ball in harm's way. So if I'm Joe Rossi, Minnesota's defensive coordinator going into Thursday night, I'm doing the best I can to keep Sims contained. That means no edge players like Ja Joyner and Danny Strigow getting too deep, letting Sims escape the pocket. I'm telling the defensive tackles like Kyler Baugh, Devin Eastern, among others, to keep their eyes on that talented quarterback. So if he does get off his first read and try to escape, that you can get a hand on him, that which allows the linebackers and secondary to make plays as well. So if Nebraska's offense scores a majority of their points because of what Sims does with his arm, you live with it. You do. But if he's consistently moving the chains on third down with his legs, which he's obviously had a very good history of doing, that's going to be a big issue for Minnesota's defense. So this is a defense that last year finished 9th in the country in total yards allowed per game, 3rd in the country in scoring defense, and 2nd in the country at getting off the field on third down. I will also remind Luke Buehr that his favorite defensive coordinator hasn't allowed an opposing team to score over 20 points
in
any of their last 6 games. So I'm going to be fascinated to see Joe Rossi versus Jeff Sims and Marcus Satterfield, because they're going to be going in preparing for ghosts. And then finally, Luke, the last key I have is what team makes the better second half adjustments. Specifically, I'll even say the third quarter is going to win this game. Because seemingly every year things happen in game one of a college football season that you won't see for the rest of the year. It's wonky. It's weird. Teams make coordinator changes, head coaching changes, quarterback changes, and you're spending most of the offseason preparing for ghosts. So you look at this game, and like I've mentioned earlier, that runs true. It's the first game in the Matt Rhule era at Nebraska. You got 2 brand new coordinators in from South Carolina and Syracuse. You know what they did at their previous stops, and largely it'll be somewhat the same, but really different on Thursday night. The only known commodity scheme-wise for this entire game is Joe Rossi's defense. I'm not here to tell you that the Gopher offense is going to look significantly different. As I mentioned, it's still a PJ Fleck-led team. But there's going to be some new wrinkles with new coordinators and a new quarterback. So while I expect the first 30 minutes of this game to be more hectic than usual, I think how each coaching staff adjusts over halftime is going to tell the final story to me. Now, I think an important stat to lay out here, Luke, is last season, Minnesota was tremendous in the third quarter of games. They outscored their opponents by 52 in the third quarter. They averaged over 7 points a quarter on offense, and they only gave up just over 3 points on defense. So if Minnesota can come out and win the third quarter like they did consistently last year, that's obviously going to put them in a prime spot to put away this game in the fourth.
Man, do you do this professionally? Because that was really good. I'm proud of you, man.
Wow. Look at you gassing me up on the first podcast of the year. I'm proud
I'm gassing you up because I got a really bad bet out there that I have to try and like get your ego high, make sure you're really confident, and then I can maybe swoop in and get one on you.
Oh, boy.
No, I think you nailed it on a lot of the keys that I was thinking of. I know I usurped the one on Jeff Sims. I think that's a really good point. I did not know that he had as many struggles fumbling the ball. That's a great point as well.
Like I said, he's got 23 interceptions his last 3 years. Yeah. He's got 17 career fumbles, but it's just that's the Jeff Sims that Nebraska is going to live and die with, is a guy that is very dynamic. He has the ability with his arm to push the ball down the field, make the throws, make the plays with his legs. I mean, to me, the most important stat there was Jeff Sims, when he's been on the field healthy in the last 13 starts, more or less, when he hasn't left the game with injury, is averaging over 3 first downs a game with his legs. So if Minnesota can just get to Jeff Sims and not allow him to really win with his legs, I feel pretty good about Minnesota winning this game on Thursday night.
All right, so let's get to predictions.
I know where you're going to be on a Wednesday night, Luke.
that's a really good point. I will be.
Someone even call it a transition of sorts before we get to our prediction.
I will be at Stubborn Herbs.
Be at Stubborn Herbs. What are we going to be doing on Wednesday night around 6:30, 7 o'clock?
We are going to have our good friend and my fellow Ginger, Daniel House, with us. We are going to do our Big Ten honors draft. We're going to probably talk about a bunch of other stuff related to the game. I imagine there will be a number of out of town people joining us, looking for something to do on a Wednesday night. I imagine there'll be a lot of in town people joining us, and we're going to be helping the Chair Trophy raise money, to be able to support the Minnesota Masonic Children's Hospital here in the Twin Cities. I might have screwed that up. It might not be the Masonic Children's Hospital anymore, but the Twin Cities Children's Hospital here, a part of the University of Minnesota. That's the most important thing that's going to happen, is we're going to help them continue to raise money for the great cause. We've had Casey O'Brien on a number of times. He's talked about the huge lofty goals that they have hit and been able to raise towards new developments there at the hospital. And I don't know. It's going to be a great night, a way to kick off the season, a way to get together, and then we'll do some drafting as well, Ryan.
So if you're coming in Wednesday night before the game from out of town, you want something to do besides sit in your hotel room, come down to Stubborn Herbs on Wednesday night. I'm also going to extend an invitation to the Nebraska fans to come out and support either Team Jack, if you're a Nebraska fan, Team 1-4, which is, to Luke's point, is the U of M's Masonic Children's Hospital. They just surpassed $1 million. Come out, listen to us, have a beverage with us, mingle with other college football fans. So again, if you're looking for something to do on Wednesday night, we'll be hanging out at Stubborn Herbs, which is just next to the stadium downtown. But Luke, I suppose we should now get into our predictions.
We should, but I just want to plug one more thing. If you're going to be there and you want a photo with Goldie, don't worry. He'll be there as well.
Look at that. Goldie's making an appearance.
Goldie's making an appearance. So if you're a Gopher fan,
if you got children or you're a child at heart and you've always wanted a picture with Goldie, this is your time to shine.
Yeah. And especially, hopefully you can find a way to get a picture of the chair, the trophy, and Goldie, because we know who started this whole thing, Ryan. It was Goldie Gopher.
There you go.
All right. So yeah, let's get to predictions. We just did our preseason prediction. I don't think that either of us are probably going to deviate too much. Again, a reminder that the spread on this specific game is
7 or 7.5 in different spots.
Yep. And the over under is 43. So I got this from Caesars. We'll go with that for our official documentation. What say you, Ryan?
So Vegas sees this game something around 25-18 ish, which is an interesting type of score for the over under. Here's what I would say. Minnesota has won 5 of the last 6 in this series, and they're, to Luke's point, they're 7 or 7.5 point favorite. Why that's important is because the Minnesota has also won the last 3 games by, you can guess it, 7 points in each of the last 3 meetings. So I think this game is going to be ugly at times as both teams try and figure out what their team is, what their identity is going to be. But at the end of the day, I trust Minnesota in year seven more than Matt Rhule in year one in terms of they know what they have. They know what the identity of their team is, the culture is, the physicality up front. The Gophers have won this game in the trenches in each of the last few seasons, and that has indeed also told the story on the scoreboard. So I don't see that changing on Thursday night with Gus Johnson in town. I got Minnesota 23, so we get three Dragan Kesich field goals, or maybe a missed extra point and three touchdowns and a field goal in there. I got Minnesota 23, Nebraska 17. I just think Minnesota is able to contain Jeff Sims enough. Plus, their offense is able to generate more explosives. And at the end of the day, fans won't be happy because they didn't cover the spread. It wasn't a big enough win, but you're 1-0 in the conference season and overall.
All right, so you got an under on the spread.
I would take, if you're taking my betting advice, which
yeah.
I don't know what I ended up being in terms of versus the spread and over-under last year. I should probably keep track.
I've got a spreadsheet running now. We're going to do this year.
All right, so I got an under here with 40 points, and I got Nebraska plus 7.
All right. I have picked, and I'm going to stick with my pick. I picked Minnesota 28-21, so I got an over, and I got a push.
Are you kidding me?
That's exactly what I picked in the preseason. I got
a push. Just do 20. All right. Here's the deal. I'm not allowing you to pick a push.
I'm over. Okay, I'll go 31-21.
I was going to say you got to go either 28-20, 28-24, one of the two, but look at you adding on more points.
More points.
I see that you're just a big Greg Harbaugh guy. I'm a big Matt Simon guy.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah, Luke absolutely. Buehler
drinking the eighth and Cali McManus Kool-Aid as always.
I got that. I'm just going lots of points this year. I got that ridiculous bet that I'm ready to fulfill on today. But yeah. I will deviate from my preseason prediction, and I'll go 31-21 Gophers.
All right, so you got 52. That's an over. You got Minnesota covering the 7.5 as well. Boy, well, I think most importantly here, we see a beautiful night at Huntington Bank Stadium to kick off the season. Remember, it is a gold out. Wear gold to the stadium if you're going, and there's going to be more games for the Big Ten on week one, Luke.
Ryan, once again, the Burns Insurance Agency is back. Your local Oakdale-based insurance agent, Bill Burns, is here to shop for you, Ryan.
Yeah, and they have saved my tail here with random home expenditures that have come up, and insurance has been able to cover it. But as to Luke's point, the Burns Insurance Agency, owned by my father, Bill Burns, believes in service. Their goal isn't to be the biggest insurance agency in the world. They're local. They're from Oakdale, Minnesota, but to be the best possible agency that puts your needs first with the service that you deserve. Now, I'm going to give you an example of what they have done here since we last talked about them. Just here in June, the Burns Insurance Agency saved the mom and pop, people like you and me, Luke, over $2,400 on their home, auto, boat, and umbrella policies. All they did was ask for a free quote. The Burns Insurance Agency comes back to them with better coverage and much lower prices, saves them almost $2,400. All they had to do was ask for a free quote, and they're saving $2,400 on their home, auto, boat, and umbrella insurance. So if you want to potentially request a free quote, you can check them out at insurancebyburns.com or email him at bill@insurancebyburns.com.
Ryan, back by popular demand again, we are going to do what we can to preview the Big Ten slate. Everyone is in action this week, Ryan, in week one. Obviously, we talked about the Gophers in Nebraska, who will be kicking off the season on Thursday night at 7 p.m. on Fox. Followed by them on Friday evening will be Central Michigan at Michigan State, a 6 o'clock kick on FS1 for those that are interested. The over-under, Ryan, in that one is 45.5. Michigan State is favored by 14.5. Looks like a beautiful night will be happening in East Lansing for those being able to attend. But if you're wanting to watch, I don't know a whole lot about Central Michigan. Michigan State is going to look to bounce back after a somewhat disappointing year last year in the Mel Tucker year two era. But yeah, it should be an interesting game.
My question with this game isn't necessarily if Central Michigan has a chance, which maybe they do, maybe they don't. But I want to see what Michigan State looks like with a brand new quarterback, brand new pass catchers. What does it look like up front? I know there's some hope that they're going to be better in the trenches. Can they take it to a kind of a middling MAC team at home? I mean, that's my question, is more so what does Jay Johnson's offense look like? And can their defense, I guess, kind of do much of anything to stop the Central Michigan Chippewas, Luke?
All right, so we are going to kick off the Peacock era, Ryan, because that happens this year, if people don't remember. The Peacock era is starting on with Eastern Carolina taking on the Michigan Wolverines at 11 a.m. Michigan
on said Peacock.
What?
On said Peacock, yeah. TV network.
So
streaming.
Yeah, it's a streaming service. So if you're not familiar with what Peacock is, it's a streaming service, much like Netflix, much like Hulu, etc. But it's NBC owned.
You don't have Peacock yet, by the way. You need to get it if you want to watch at least, I believe, 2 Gopher football games this fall.
I feel like we have to have a guidance section. We have to say, like, what's the best way for you to save money? But yeah, you're probably going to need it. Like, we'll come up with, like, some sort of strategy. But yes, this kicks off the Peacock era in Big Ten football. Michigan, 36-point favorite with a 52 over under. Not a lot of hope for East Carolina. For East Carolina, the Pirates are going to probably have a kind of a rough day.
I think a lot of teams are going to have a rough day against Michigan, especially at home. To me, what I'm looking for in this game from the Michigan side of things is, can J.J. McCarthy... is he improved in terms of his deep ball? Anything past the yard, you know, say past the sticks, 10 plus yards down the field? How does their new look offensive line look with a couple of transfers in there? Are Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards still the guys of yesteryear in terms of one of the most dynamic running back duos in college football? And then defensively, I mean, East Carolina can at least last season, they could at least put up some points at times. I'm looking at their last two games where they scored 53 and 49. But that, I want to see what that Michigan front does against the Pirates of Luke's favorite East Carolina team.
All right. So then I was going to kick off their season, the number 25 ranked Iowa Hawkeyes against Utah State. Over under 45. Iowa favored by 25. They're in Kinnick in Iowa City. I'm curious. I mean, obviously they see this as kind of a blowout, right? But it seems like a lot of confidence in that Iowa offense to start the season.
Yeah, they got them projected to score like 30 points.
Exactly. That's the only thing that caught me off guard. I don't know, is Cade McNamara going to be healthy for this game? I'm not sure if they've said.
I know what my Iowa 24/7 brethren have been screaming into the ether that he'll be ready. My gut tells me there's a lot more to that story that I don't know if he will be healthy. I know there was a picture put out by the Iowa football Twitter account that he had a helmet on for a walkthrough, which cool. But I know that he wasn't practicing 10 days after he sustained that injury when BTN was there. Even with or without Cade McNamara, Utah State is a dreadful team. Iowa's defense still has Phil Parker, Cooper DeJean. I mean, this is a game that Iowa should be able to put up enough points offensively with, say, Caleb Johnson if Cade McNamara can't go. But that's the story to me. Is Cade McNamara play? And if so, does the Iowa offense actually look competent because they have a competent quarterback back there?
All right. Next, this is probably one of the better games to keep an eye on. You have the Purdue Boilermakers playing host to Fresno State. This will be a 11 a.m. kick on BTN. This is maybe the game to watch at that time slot. The over-under is 48, and the spread is 3.5. Ryan Walters will kick off his tenure at Purdue against a very seasoned Jeff Tedford.
A Fresno State team that I will remind you is in a 9-game winning streak. They started their year last year, I believe, 1-4, and then rattled off, I think, 9 straight wins. So this is a confident, I guess I would say, Fresno State team. To your point, I think it's the closest spread of any of the games across. So if you're looking for a competitive game, if Michigan is already up on East Carolina by a lot in the second half, same thing goes with Iowa and Utah State, turn it to BTN, see what Ryan Walters looks like. I want to see what Hudson Card looks like. That is the transfer quarterback has taken. There's been a lot of hubbub from the BTN folks that when they were there, that they were incredibly impressed by him. I want to see what it looks like in year one of a defensive scheme change. I want to see Luke's favorite defensive line coach, Brick Haley, and see how much that.
Oh, Chad Wilt too. Oh, no, wrong game.
No.
Wrong guy. Wrong state, wrong game.
I want to see how much that defensive line underachieves against Fresno State. It wouldn't shock me at all to see Fresno State pull out a win here, to be quite honest with you. So this is a Fresno State team that obviously ended their 2022 very, very confident. And this should be one of the better games that you're able to see on the Big Ten slate on Saturday.
Yeah, I was getting ahead of myself, Ryan. The CBS era is also starting this week. And the first game at 2:30 will be the Ohio State Buckeyes against the Indiana Hoosiers, who obviously are led by Chad Wilt, who I got a little bit excited about.
You two talk and text more than people know. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. He's my guy. And the over under for this is 59, Ryan. You know what the spread is?
What is it, like 28 point?
30 points.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to me, this game is intriguing solely on the Ohio State side of things, because here's a bet I would have you take, Luke. I'll say Halloween is the date. Is Tom Allen still employed by Indiana on Halloween?
Oh, okay. I got to get a new tab in the spreadsheet.
Here's a spoiler for those of you who like my side bets for whatever reason. I made a side bet with Daryl Thompson at Big Ten Media Days that he said, and I know I've got great odds here, that Indiana is going to make a bowl game. And if that's were to occur, Luke, I would imagine that Tom Allen saves his job. Now, I believe the over-under for Indiana this year is 3.5, so maybe DT's got a little bit of Hoosier juice flowing, considering his son played there.
He's got to be sweating right now.
Oh, yeah. It's
Here's the thing. So they start – okay, I'll take this bet.
So which side do you want to take? Because I don't even know that I have a strong opinion one way or another.
Okay. So they got Ohio State, Indiana State, Louisville, Akron, Maryland, Michigan, Rutgers, and Penn State all before Halloween. Mm-hmm. I think he's employed.
How many games do you have him winning outside of Indiana State? Because I think Louisville will be favored.
I think Akron, he's got a chance.
So you're hoping that he's 3-5.
I think
heading into the Wisconsin game then, because they're going to lose against Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State. Louisville, Maryland.
You're
hoping that they can sneak one out against Rutgers, is what you're telling me.
Oh man, it feels a lot like.
I look at that November slate.
I'll take he's employed. You got unemployed?
Yeah, I'll take the unemployed side. I'll say that he is fired after the Penn State game.
Okay.
Give you a little action here. See if we can't. You put it in the spreadsheet, but. On the Ohio State side of things, it's what does life look like for them after C.J. Stroud? They've obviously got some tremendously talented quarterbacks. They have the best wide receiver duo in college football in Marvin Harrison Jr. Yes, remember that Marvin Harrison's kid, the one you grew up watching catching passes from Peyton Manning, has a kid who's going to be a top 10 draft pick in the next NFL draft if you want to feel old. Plus, they got Emeka Ebuka. Plus, they have what other random five-star on the offense. They're going to be explosive, but what does it look like if it's Kyle McCord? Can Ohio State's defense not be consistently giving up chunk plays, and they shouldn't be to an Indiana offense that's likely dreadful? But there's at least some intrigue on CBS at 2:30.
All right, and this is an interesting bet because in the end, the transfer era – and just like recruiting in general is being kind of turned on its head, and especially from recruiting I maybe don't like this bet as much as I thought when I looked at that schedule, Ryan.
Well, I don't know if Indiana's going to want to get out ahead of it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
If I would have put the over-under by the end of the season, you wouldn't have taken it, because I wouldn't have taken it, because I would have said he's going to get fired, because I'm not bullish on Indiana.
Yeah.
But will Indiana want to take the approach of they want to get out in front to start to backdoor things, or will they want to be respectful, say, to Tom Allen until the end of the season and fire him? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be fun to track. Same thing. Coffee. Is it coffee or are we changing it?
Yeah. No. All these are mudslingers.
Okay.
Mudslingers coffee, the unofficial official coffee of this podcast. We're not getting paid for.
And just for the record, I don't drink coffee, so these coffees are going to my wife.
Well, we're going to explore that in a future episode of why you don't drink coffee, because I don't want to get into that right now, but something I learned about you 6 years into our relationship, honey.
All right. The other 230, another 230 game on FS1 will be Mo Lindquist's Buffalo Bulls against the 19th ranked Wisconsin Badgers. The over under is 54.5 with a spread as 28 in favor of Wisconsin, Ryan.
So the thing I have here is I want to see what Buffalo looks like, because Buffalo is at least a middling MAC team, a team that made a bowl game last year, played against Georgia Southern, won it. They started out poorly last year, but they came on strong. But I also want to see what it looks like for Luke Fickell in game one, Phil Longo in game one, Tanner Mordecai, Braylon Allen. I expect Wisconsin to win by a lot. So it is Vegas. That's why they're a 4-touchdown favorite. But does it look crisp is the thing I want to see, because Buffalo is a team that they should win easily against. But is it going to be into the third quarter and the game is 21-17? If the game is, say, Tanner Mordecai is having an off game, is it 17-13, something like that? Can Wisconsin look crisp in game one against a MAC opponent?
All right. Next in the final 230 slot is Townsend visiting Maryland. I believe that Townsend is an FCS school, so there is no line on this game.
I'm going to see if I can find one, because it's going to be egregious.
Yeah, I don't think it's great. Probably.
Yeah, there is no line on this game because it's an FCS team that I can find anywhere. Yeah. I would imagine Maryland, say, a 34-point favorite or something. And if we can count on anything, it's that Mike Locksley in September against FCS opponents is absolutely going to demolish them. It's just been against inferior opponents, especially at home. Mike Locksley just puts the foot on the gas and he doesn't let up until the final whistle blows. You know, I think back to last year when they put up 56 on Charlotte, they obviously returned the younger Tonga Viola. I mean, I think Maryland's going to be a pretty good team. I think they're going to be a fringe top 25 team this year. I'm bullish on them, I guess, in that aspect. But they're going to kick the doors off of Townsend. So if you're looking to see what Mike Locksley looks like against an FCS team at 230, put on BTN.
All right. Then the first NBC game in the NBC era that is not a Peacock game, but just an NBC game, will be at 6:30. You've got the Penn State Nittany Lions playing host to the West Virginia Mountaineers, who the Gophers are familiar with from a recent bowl game. The over-under is 50.5 with the spread at 20.5.
West Virginia is not projected to make a bowl game. They have a win total somewhere between 4.5 and 5.5, as I see it on the sites right now. To Luke's point, they're nearly a 3-touchdown favorite at home. I have not been shy about this. I'm bullish on Penn State this year. I think Penn State takes the jump from a really good top 10 team, but not a college football playoff contender, to an actual college football playoff contender. Now, a lot of that rests on their quarterback, Drew Aller, what I think of him. But this is a game that Penn State should beat up West Virginia in the trenches. They've got a pretty good offensive line. I know. I think they have the best offensive lineman in college football. They've got some edge guys that are likely going to be top 60 picks as well. But this is a game, especially at night, I think Gopher fans can attest. They remember what that thing looks like at night. Even if it's not a whiteout, that place is going to be rocking. And that should be a pretty good game to put on as the nightcap. It's 6:30 on NBC.
Yep, and then the other one on BTN will be the Illinois Fighting Illini against the Toledo Rockets. The over under for this is 46 with the Illini with a 9.5 point advantage.
Yeah, Toledo's thought of as one of the best teams in the MAC this year. I'm looking at their over under for win totals somewhere between 8.5 and 9.5. So they're projected to be one of the top teams in the MAC. I know that Illinois is probably a little worried about that. I think the Vegas spread probably tells the tape that they're kind of worried, but not really worried, considering the 9.5 versus Minnesota 7 or 7.5 versus Nebraska. But what I would say is it still going to be Brett Bielema bully ball? They've got a brand new quarterback. They got brand new tailbacks. Their secondary is going to look a lot different, but they still have one of the best fronts in college football in their front seven with Johnny Newton and Keith Randolph, among others. Can they just create a ton of havoc on the Toledo quarterback? And how does their offense look without Chase Brown? They're still going to be good up front. They still got Isaiah Williams there on the slot, among others. But it's at least going to be intriguing. I think you're going to, if you are just looking for a nightcap for one of these games, whether it's NBC or this game on BTN, you should have something that's at least appealing in the second half.
All right. Last but not least, there's another CBS game, and it's on Sunday at 11 a.m.
I just learned that there is a college football game, I suppose, because the NFL is not playing.
Yeah, it hasn't started yet. So Northwestern will be traveling to, I think, yeah, they are traveling to Piscataway to take on Rutgers.
Can you imagine a worse game on a Sunday morning?
Or a better game.
Turning on Northwestern at Rutgers.
So you got the over-under at 40.5.
That's way higher than I thought.
And Rutgers is favored by 6.5. Here's the thing that's a little bit befuddling to me. The matchup predictor that uses ESPN's like advanced analytics has Northwestern winning this game 51% of the time.
In what world?
I don't know, man.
There's not a shot.
Yeah.
So Northwestern hasn't won a game at American soil since 2021. Yep. Just so we're all clear here. They've obviously got the scandal going on. And then you've got the Rutgers Scarlet Knights, who have lost, I think, 8 of their last 9 Big Ten games, with that Indiana one as the lone exception. If you're looking for points to be scored on Sunday morning as you're drinking your coffee, this isn't the game for you. And I'm just going to tell you right now as a friend, because you have Minnesota East and Kirk Shiraka as the offensive coordinator. You have Joe Harris-Simiak as the defensive coordinator. But this is a game I think is somewhere around 20-13 at the end of it. And I'd be shocked if Rutgers doesn't come away with a victory.
All right. So that's going to wrap this episode, Ryan. It's really fun to, again, talk some Gopher football, preview the season. Excited to have these games started. Obviously, we'll be at Stubborn Herbs to kick it off. People should be joining Dinkytown Athletes, joining now by donating or becoming a member or leveling up your member. You can win some great prizes that they've detailed on their Twitter. It's just an exciting time of year. Hope springs eternal, Ryan, here in August.
It is, and I'm just excited to come back on Friday with you and Derek Burns, talk about the game. For those of you who haven't already, join Gopher Illustrated. The season's here. We'll talk recruiting. We'll talk about all the things behind the scenes. And $1 gets you all the way through, I believe at this point, the North Carolina game, if not the Louisiana game. Come support me. We appreciate you supporting this podcast. Thank you to Comply Foam. Thank you to Home Field Apparel and Burns Assurance.
Again, thank you for listening and making this podcast possible. And go Gophers.